Today on the PC Gamer Podcast, Civilization V has a new expansion. One of our favorite indie developers announces a turn-based robot football game. TJ returns from visiting Blizzard's Heart of the Swarm launch event. And Saints Row 4, Battlefield 4, Thief 4, which is no longer called Thief 4, but a lot of 4s. There's a lot to talk about. Stick with us. Here we go. Hello and welcome to episode 348 for Friday, March 15th. This is Evan Lottie, executive editor at PC Gamer, and I'm joined by Omri Petit, associate editor.
Hello, everybody.
And the aforementioned TJ Hafer, coming back from Baltimore. Two events in a week, TJ.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Two press events. TJ is our contributing editor. He saw Elder Scrolls Online, which we unfortunately can't talk about this week.
I really can't say anything about it, but stay tuned next week and expect the unexpected.
One word summary.
Expect the unexpected.
That's not one word.
I think
three
that's
words.
Good. That's good.
Oh man.
But you did see Heart of the Swarm. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we wanted to mention because SimCity is kind of the big news topic. If you're following PC games this week, if you read Reddit, if you exist on the internet in any capacity, you're probably hearing some talk about it. A lot of it critical. A lot of it, controversial complaining and things like that. And, we talked about SimCity at length last week. I didn't want to devote any significant part of the podcast to it this week, but we just want to quickly mention, just sort of give an update on where the game stands, I think. So, yeah, as we mentioned last week, there were some significant server issues at launch, both on the Origin side and on the SimCity side itself. A lot of problems connecting to the game. They've since added a bunch of new servers across all territories. And almost universally, they're having some periods of downtime, but you can play the game pretty much when you want. Hey, that's a feature, I guess. So the connection issues have basically been solved, in my opinion, at least in my experience. And beyond that, Max has also introduced like a server, status website.
Yeah.
So you can check online for things like that. Mm-hmm. And they're also, on the more technical side, because there have been a lot of issues that have, complaints that have emerged over the past week about whether SimCity is a broken simulation. We have a big article about this on our website. Tyler took the time to sort of, examine some of these issues, investigate complaints like, there are phantom citizens in my city that I haven't really, created myself, and the population numbers are wrong. Well, instead of, just going on about that at length, which is probably not great for a podcast, just go read our article on our website. Tyler did a great job on that.
Yeah, he's our SimCity guru.
Yeah, but beyond that, Max is working on a fix for traffic, some traffic-related bugs, and just the way traffic performs within the game, which is probably a fair complaint. It's not very intuitive.
Yeah.
They released a quick video of something they're testing on their test server, an adjustment to that. So, game has improved. If your reason for waiting was you were afraid of not being able to play it, that's kind of solved now.
Yeah, I actually appreciate the very the last part there where Max has actually recognized a problem that needed fixing with the game mechanic side of things, and they're actually going forward and looking at getting something out for fixing that, especially with the traffic, which is I've run into some traffic problems in the hours I've been able to play the game, and it's great because the posts that the developers put up on their website detailing about traffic really goes in depth about how it works and what and how it's going to work when they put in the fix.
Yeah.
And there really is a nice difference that's going to show up in that, emergency vehicles will always try and go into an empty lane now rather than getting stopped up. Fire trucks, they'll only one will go to a house that's burning on fire instead of all of them. So, it's really good for improving the flow and sort of happiness. And overall, it's going to be a nice ripple effect change for everything because roads are the lifeblood of your city.
Yeah.
That's where everything begins and where everything ends.
Totally.
To sound all prophetic, but
no, it drives all other mechanics in the game.
Yeah. So
much.
Any kind of fix that would that has an across the board improvement is pretty welcome.
Cool. So let's talk about the Civilization V expansion.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This was announced today. Today's Friday.
It was.
Yes. Brand new.
Very, very excited.
Yeah.
It was originally the leaked title for it was One World. They've since changed that to Brave New World. But it's going to be basically the kind of diplomacy culture-focused expansion, similar to Beyond the Sword in Civ 4. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, Civ 5 is my second most played game on Steam of all time after Crusader Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I've got like 180 hours in it and looking forward to spending probably another 40 to 60 more. Let's see, they're adding 9 new civilizations. The only one we know about so far is Poland.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's new civilizations or new leaders. I heard 9 new leaders. I can't remember.
Well, so far, Civ 4 had you could play certain civilizations with multiple leaders, but so far in Civ 5, it's been like one leader per civilization.
Okay, cool.
So, I don't know. It might be cool to have...
alternates.
You know, yeah, alternates with slightly different strategies for the same civs. I'd go in for that.
Cool. So, it's $30. It's going to be $30. It's going to be out this summer.
Right.
And... I mean, among the new features and new balance stuff, there's going to be a cultural victory option, which I think totally makes sense.
Yeah. No, I love it. That's actually one of my favorite victory conditions in Civ 4 was the cultural victory. So mm-hmm. I'm glad they're bringing that back.
So you can win basically by drinking the finest whiskey over the longest period of time.
Right.
And just sticking your pinky out as you do so.
Yeah, and you know, getting your loud young people music played across
the world, way to bring the
to
world
the chagrin of the elders of foreign cultures, you know.
Cool. So 8 new world wonders in addition to that. Let's see, new industrial age ideologies, new scenarios covering the American Civil War and the colonial push into Africa.
Which, those are really good, by the way. I know, like, a very small percentage of the players have actually played them or have played all of them, but the little mini scenarios... A lot of them came with the DLC packs, but you can get them all now with the complete edition for Civ 5 are actually really good. I really liked Fall of Rome. I really liked the Polynesian one where you have to, like, basically colonize the Pacific Islands. Those are really well-done scenarios.
Sometimes it's cool to be sort of told, have an explicit goal in front of you rather than sort of just being in a sandbox scenario. Cool.
Yeah, for sure.
And the other two big features that they're introducing are international trade routes and a World Congress. So the World Congress, the way I understand it, you can go read more about this on our website. We asked them to sort of explain how this works. It's basically a voting system on different measures proposed by civilizations.
Which is kind of how the UN worked in Civ 4 and why people were kind of annoyed how stripped down the UN was in Civ 5. But yeah, stuff like bans on nuclear weapons and things like that will be coming back. So it adds a cool new political element to it other than the current state of the UN wonder in Civ 5, which is just like you get enough people to vote for you and you win a diplomatic victory and it's over.
Yeah. Pretty boring.
Yeah.
I think. Great. So more opportunities for intrigue, diplomacy, war. Looking forward to that. So TJ.
Yeah.
We mentioned your spectacular cross North American trip, beginning in Irvine, California, and ending this week in, I guess you're in Baltimore. And
yeah,
then you
basically.
Came back to San Francisco.
Yeah, I left Monday morning for Irvine, flew straight from Irvine to Baltimore for Elder Scrolls, and got back like last night at 9:30. So I was gone pretty much this entire week.
Yeah.
Flying across the country.
And of course, you're in Irvine to check out and sort of report on the Heart of the Swarm launch event. StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm finally released this week.
It did.
A lot of you guys are probably playing that. And yeah, I guess first of all, let's quickly revisit, TJ, you know, what's being added by the game. I've heard there's more campaign missions than Wings of Liberty, first of all.
That's not actually the case. Wings of Liberty had like 28 or 29 missions. Mm. Heart of the Swarm has 20 full missions, and then it has the evolution missions, which Blizzard wisely did not count because they're not really full missions. They're just to demonstrate the different ways you can evolve the different Zerg units, and they let you try out both variants, and then you pick one and kind of go with that through the rest of the campaign.
How would you describe, I mean, sort of the immediate impact? We're going to see an MLG very soon. You can talk about that as well.
Actually, by the time you're listening to this podcast, it will probably be underway.
Terrific.
Yeah.
But what do you expect the impact of the new units to be on multiplayer and on esports?
It's hard to say. Dustin Browder gave kind of the same answer when I interviewed him, but because when new units come out and when big changes like this are made, it takes a while for the metagame to stabilize.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I've seen personally, just watching games from the beta, is that mirror matchups, so Terran versus Terran, Protoss versus Protoss, Zerg versus Zerg, those are a lot more interesting now than I feel like they were at the end of Wings of Liberty.
Oh, thank God. Lovely.
Yeah.
There's snooze fests right now.
Yeah, I mean, Terran versus Terran is just so fun to watch now.
Great.
With all the new units and strategies that have been added in. It's probably going to give us a little bit of a situation early on where some of the players who were seen as the best of the best in Wings of Liberty aren't necessarily going to rise to the top. The guys that have been practicing Heart of the Swarm for the longest, I think, are going to have kind of a decisive advantage going in, and then it'll probably kind of stable out. Some of the old, some of the new will end up, you know, becoming the new kind of top-tier pros.
It's pretty likely that a whole new set of strategies will arise with the arrival of Swarm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've already seen a ton of that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, they really, I think, did a pretty good job with the new Heart of the Swarm units, just giving you more options and giving you more ways to deal with situations that kind of became a little bit stagnant in Wings of Liberty. So
yeah, so if you haven't watched StarCraft for a while and you're listening to this podcast over the Saturday weekend, I guess you can go back and watch Video On Demand if it exists for MLG.
Usually is.
But it might be a particularly interesting weekend to watch some StarCraft because, you know, so many of these units, they're not new for a lot of these players. They have been playing the beta, but they're relatively new. And you might see some interesting and sort of messy and strange, entertaining games.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Cool. Why don't you tell us like who you got a chance to talk to at the event? You mentioned Chris Metzen.
Chris Metzen, which was probably like the interview I've done since coming to PC Gamer, where I was the most afraid of just losing it because I'm a huge Chris Metzen fan. He is an awesome guy to talk to. We talked about the story of Heart of the Swarm, and I actually got him to tease a little bit of Legacy of the Void, which is going to be the Protoss expansion. So did a pretty long interview with him, which you should be able to check out on the site. I also talked to Sam Didier, who is the senior art director, and we talked about, you know, where he got the inspiration for like all the new Zerg units and kind of the challenges of creating a cast of characters who are, you know, inherently alien and turning that into something a player can interact with and relate to and stuff like that. And also Robert Clotworthy, who is the voice actor for Jim Raynor, I got to talk to briefly, and he's a really cool, down-to-earth guy. He was a lot of fun to talk to.
He wears a mean scarf.
Yes, he does.
Wears a mean scarf. Cool.
Indeed.
All right, so we'll have more to share about Heart of the Swarm next week once we've had a chance to dig into it much more ourselves, watch some esports.
Barely been able to play it.
Yeah, so far the reception.
All the traveling I've been doing, yeah.
So far the reception seems really good. We'll share our own thoughts next week.
For sure.
So let's transition to a segment I like to call the 3-4s, Battlefield 4.
So clever.
Saints Row 4 and Thief 4. It's called Thief now. They renamed it.
Thank goodness it's not Thief-4-if.
Yeah, that was a bad move. Glad they retracted that.
Four looks just like an E.
Takes some bravery to rename a game, honestly. I don't know, in terms of branding and corporations and stuff.
Or removing a number. Numbers usually, you know, tend to attract fans of the series.
In the example of Assassin's Creed 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they actually added a name to Assassin's Creed 4, so.
Right. Anywho.
Yes.
So Battlefield 4, this isn't going to be too long of a segment because we just got an email today, Friday, from the Electronic Arts folks.
You might have seen me throw it up on the website today, which is Friday.
Yeah, so we just got a very simple, almost like invite to this GDC event, the Game Developers Conference held here in San Francisco for March 26th. So that's the date that they're unveiling Battlefield 4. They didn't really say explicitly if they're going to be, you know, making video public for Battlefield 4 on that day.
Right.
Or if they're just going to be showing it to press on that day. I would expect information to be coming out very, very shortly after that.
The only kind of very faint hint that we can see about Battlefield 4 is actually hiding in the background of the invite itself, which is a blurred out picture of an Abrams tank, as it looks like. So it pretty much might be a continuation of the Modern Warfare theme that's going on from Battlefield 3, that all of the expansions. So who knows? We might see something new or just a continuation of
Yeah.
You know, more modern military battlegrounds.
Yeah. I mean, the two big fundamental questions are, is it a next-gen game? Because mm-hmm. that's going to...
Oh, yes.
Is it this year or the following year? I would not expect it to be a next-gen game.
Right.
I would expect it to be coming out this year on current-gen platforms. Mm-hmm. And, gosh, what else was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, what's the setting? You know, what's
yeah,
the setting?
Definitely.
Is it just kind of like, yeah, it's the same thing. It's kind of an expansion.
Right.
Or,
you know,
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see.
I think they should just go full-on dinosaurs with it.
Prehistoric warfare.
If you guys haven't seen those Photoshops, just Google Battlefield dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That might not give you the results you want. Battlefield 3 dinosaurs. I'll probably do it. Cool.
Stay safe on Google, kids.
All right. So Saints Row 4, hey, that exists now.
Yes.
After being sold in the THQ breakup to Deep Silver, who are the folks that published Dead Island over in Germany.
Yep.
So it's coming out August 20th in North America. I think it's the 23rd in the UK.
That's correct.
Great. Thank you for confirming my memory. And there's a trailer, and Omri, you got a chance to watch that trailer.
I did.
You're a big Saints Row fan.
I've played all the Saints Rows. I took a look, and I mean, it's great just to see Volition just continue with their theme of just ridiculous over-the-top slapstick action that they... You know, they were trying out a little in the second game. They went full bore out on the third, and they're pretty much doubling that in the fourth game. At the basic level, it's actually sort of capitalizing on the idea that open world games brings, where you're pretty much allowed to do whatever you like. I mean, you just go out and just go nuts. And that's basically the basis of the Saints Row games now. I mean, does anybody remember when Saints Row was about gang warfare?
What?
I don't think so. I mean, it's just all about causing as much chaos as possible, and that's pretty much what Volition wants you to do. But from what I saw when I watched the trailer, it looks like it used quite a lot of the same assets from Saints Row the Third, and I actually think there's a reason for that, because the fourth was actually originally planned as a DLC pack for the third.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was supposed to be called Enter the Dominatrix, I believe.
Right.
And that got canceled, but they kept all of the content they made for it, and they pretty much repackaged it and expanded it into a full-blown, full game. So you should expect to see a lot of very similar visual styles and, you know, items that you might have spotted in Dominatrix trailers and whatnot. But it's nice. I hopefully will be able to see something new, something maybe a new visual direction, because for right now it looks a lot like Saints Row the Third.
Okay.
So it might seem like it's sort of a, you know, as we were talking about Battlefield 4, just a larger expansion pack. But hopefully they'll be adding a lot more stuff. And then the trailer did show a lot more stuff. You have superpowers now. Apparently, you can fly.
Because why not?
Yes. That's pretty much the answer for pretty much everything you'll see in Saints Row. Why not? You can punch things, fly, you know, shoot lasers out of your eyes. I have no idea why superpowers are in there, but it's in there. You still got a lot of WTF-worthy weapons in there. There was a laser beam, I believe, that was expanding a policeman's head to cartoonish sizes. And his
eyes Gary's
were...
Mod.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. There was a rocket launcher in the shape of a guitar, because why not?
Yeah, everybody's seen Desperado. Come on.
And, yeah, I mean, it's good to see them just embracing that ridiculousness, instead of, you know, it's pretty much saying, you know what, you can go to the Rockstar games if you want serious story along with your open world flavors. Here you can let down your hair and, you know, fire a million lasers or whatnot. I mean, that's pretty interesting to note about, too, because back in the day, Rockstar's open world games used to be noted for its own version of over-the-top violence. And then Saints Row appeared, which was kind of a spoof on all of the GTA games.
Yeah, it's because GTA is like a spoof of reality.
Right.
Saints Row is a spoof of GTA, so it's like a compounding interest.
And now, four games in, it's pretty much its own beast, its own character. I mean, you can't think of Saints Row now without just explosions, dildo bats. I don't know. So
yeah, I mean, it's a clever way to change the brand of that game, honestly. I mean,
yeah.
The added benefit is, you know, you see all these videos of people playing together and they're ridiculous, avatars, or they'll like remake the characters from Breaking Bad and bring them into their Saints Row world in a co-op game.
Yeah.
It just becomes sort of a self-marketing game at that point, in a similar way that Minecraft was, because, hey, you do something funny, you want to put it on YouTube, in the same way that you build something in Minecraft, you want to show your friends and show Reddit.
Yeah. It's one of those powerful experience generators that you can create yourself through anything you do. So, looking forward to it.
Neato. Let's talk about Thief. Omri, another one of your favorite games, our resident stealth master.
One of my favorite games of all time.
Great.
We actually don't see him in the office except when he shows up for the podcast. That's how much of a stealth fanatic he is.
Indeed. So the new Thief, it's Game Informer's most recent cover story. So they're spreading a bunch of good information around about that. It's coming in 2014 to next-gen platforms and PC, of course. Eidos Montreal is making it. If you're not familiar with them, they made Deus Ex.
Human Revolution.
Yep.
They did not make the boss battles for Deus Ex, which is also a point in their favor.
That's reassuring. Yeah. And let's see, I dug up this short sort of plot summary.
Yes.
The world's residents are suffering from a plague, as well as the rule of a tyrant called the Baron. Eidos Montreal is promising that the game will offer players many paths on which they can guide Garrett through its wide-open levels.
So I really hope that sort of blurb for the plot doesn't comprise the entire storyline for the new Thief, because I really want to see just a continuation of the series, dark mysticism that was present that you slowly unearthed as you progressed through the story, because the previous games did an excellent job of hiding just enough information from you to keep you playing and to find out what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're pretty much just inserted directly into the city. No backstory, no real reason why you're stealing things other than that you're a thief and you like shinies. But then you eventually find out that there's a greater plot going on. There's a greater mystery going on. And hopefully this sort of Robin Hood meets evil rich guy story will expand some more to incorporate that kind of stuff. Other than that, there was some talk about Garrett's new look, which is a little bit more, I don't know what the right word for it is, assassin-y, I suppose, because it is a little bit similar to Assassin's Creed's Altair.
Yeah, they're saying that.
And yeah.
I think Eidos is, and Square Enix, the publisher, are looking at this game as, I mean, they're investing a lot of money. It's a big developer. It's an expensive game to make. It's a 3D game on all these platforms, on new technology.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to sort of look at this as an opportunity for taking a brand they own and how can they, exploit it? How can they make it a little bit more mainstream so it's not just catering to the hardcore, the top 5% of the Dishonored community or something.
Yeah, I mean, they did elaborate later on that they did comment about making Garrett more mainstream, but they did elaborate later on that the mainstream comment was because they changed his look from internal designs from a much more goth vibe, like black hair curtained over his eyes, black fingernails and whatnot, to something that we see today. And it's not really because they're trying to make it more mainstream for a greater audience. That's what they say. But, I mean, there's really a lot of attractive things to say about a guy in a dark hood wearing a half mask and bouncing off the walls with gadgets. So,
cool.
I suppose they did a good job, and I'm really looking forward to it as well.
Is there, there's still a lot of details to be revealed about the game. No screen. There are some screenshots floating around, but there's no video, so we don't really know how the game plays.
Yeah.
Is there anything mechanically from the old Thief games that you're like, man, I really hope they're still able to include this, even though it's going to be a multi-platform game? Any sort of thing you can do in Thief that you really, really want to make sure you're able to do in the new game?
What I would really like to see is the ability to complete your objectives through pretty much any way you can think of. They did say that they will offer many paths for a player to choose from. That is a little bit too generic for my tastes, because many paths could mean either three doors standing in front of you, go down A, B, or C, and it's the same linear path except different wallpapers. The previous thieves, again, as I said before, they pretty much just plopped you right into a district of the city or a outside environment, and they just let you have at it. And you have to figure out a way to get in and out without being detected and without dying. And that's what I would really like to see, because being able to explore and just drink in this world. It was similar to what I felt with Dishonored City, and just being able to walk around and have a look at everything before actually, you know, doing the task is what I really want to see in Thief, because the city there is pretty much one of the direct inspirations for Dunwall. So
yeah,
that's
terrific. Thanks for sharing that, Omri.
Yeah, no problem.
Just looking forward to kind of what games are going to be influenced by. Like, is there going to be some Skyrim in there? Is going to be kind of feel like that even a little bit?
We'll see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know whether or not more RPG elements will factor into the Thief. Eidos would have to be really careful putting in some RPG elements in there. Sure, it sort of encourages more replayability and more gameplay, but it might distract. It might just take away attention from the fact that you have to sneak around. You just, you know, no matter how many points you put into stealth or silent footsteps or whatnot, at the end of the day, it's really up to your own skill in trying to evade detection and avoiding guards and, you know, escaping correctly.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. All right, so moving on to Frozen End Zone, which is the game we alluded to with turn-based robot football gameplay in the introduction. So you guys might recall Frozen Synapse.
Great game.
You guys play that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically, it was an indie strategy game created by Mode 7 Games over in the UK. It was basically like top-down Counter-Strike.
Yeah.
And its big conceit, its big mechanic was what Mode 7 called simultaneous turn-based gameplay. So in other words, you'd be controlling a team of guys with different guns in Frozen Synapse. You know, a machine gun guy, a shotgun guy, a rocket launcher guy. And you have them in a procedurally generated map, basically, in a level. And I'm controlling five guys, Omer's controlling five guys, and I plot in my moves about, you know, this guy's going to go left, he's going to shoot here, this guy's going to go right, he's going to wait and look for enemies, this guy's going to hold position and crouch. And we plot out those moves, and then they happen simultaneously. It's almost like if you played chess, but
yeah,
you had to queue up your actions.
Right, yep.
And it was a really terrific, it was actually our indie game of the year our strategy game of the year 2011. So we were super excited. I was super excited when these guys approached us to reveal their next game, which we did on the website today. And it's a really interesting, like, I don't know, you could kind of call it a spiritual successor. It's weird to say spiritual successor to something that is only a couple years old. But they're finding a way to sort of translate those mechanics of queuing up your actions and then seeing them play out against your opponent into a sports game, into a turn-based, futuristic sports game played out by robots.
Sounds awesome.
And if this sounds really hard to wrap your head around, there's a trailer. Like, just go to our website. We have a huge interview with these guys that really breaks down. I had them sort of walk me through, like, how does a play go? It's basically football. And I had them sort of walk me through, you know, what happens when you snap the ball, and then, you know, like, do I throw to a specific player? Do I throw to an area? Things like that. But I'm really excited about this. I feel like we sort of need more strategy games that appeal to non-strategy game players. And, football is a good context for that. There's going to be a lot of tackling. They talked about like dismemberment as a thing, dismantlement. I think that's the word they invented in the interview.
Wow.
There's going to be robot upgrades. You're going to be playing as a coach with a backstory, I guess, in a single-player campaign. It's a 2014 game, but they're going to be doing some sort of, pay into the alpha period, just as they did in Frozen Synapse. So we'll probably get to play it in 2013 or some version of it, the multiplayer beta at least. And just like Synapse, like, part of the reason I'm playing Counter-Strike so much lately is because I can kind of come and go as I please. I can get a bunch of matches in half an hour or an hour or something. And they're really emphasizing, like a match is going to be 5 minutes or so, depending on how quickly you and your opponent make decisions and stuff. And, you know, it's the same sort of, you know, you're just trying to outscore your opponent. It's not like a knockout style game like Frozen Synapse, of course, because there's no guns. But, yeah, really, you're really curious, kind of experimental continuation of their ideas. And
yeah, I mean, do you think that drive to appeal to non-strategy gamers is what is, you know, the reason why Mode 7 made that big jump from shooters to football players?
Yeah, to some extent. I don't know. I mean, it, when you look at the game, it's a little hard to decode to some extent. There's a lot of like bright colors. There's, you know, blue and orange. It's very neon, and there's some bloom happening. But if you see it in motion, it's like, oh, that's like robot football. I get that, and it sort of reminds you of like an old SNES game or something.
Wow,
to some extent. So I don't know. Hopefully people will pick it up because it's a really cool, easily playable concept. I don't know. I love the way they sort of implemented their planning system. It's just the way you sort of use these Photoshop style tools to design what your movements are. And I don't know. I love that style of strategy game because it's so such a low time investment.
Yeah. Sounds like it. It sounds like something a lot of people can just jump in and play straight away with minimal fuss.
Cool. All right. Go read more on the website. We can try and crack open this huge topic that I put down in our podcast notes.
Oh, boy.
So one of the stories I posted earlier this week, I was down at Tripwire Interactive, the guys that make Killing Floor and Red Orchestra 2. And they're down in Georgia. I was down there a couple weeks ago, and I was there to see Rising Storm, which is their new sort of standalone expansion for Red Orchestra 2, set in the Pacific. It's, you know, the Americans versus the Japanese. It's really interesting. We're going to have a preview hitting on Monday with my thoughts about that. But while I was there, I was talking to John. You know, they're an independent studio. He comes from a modding community. He's worked on Unreal 3 for, like, Unreal, I guess, just as an engine for, like, the past 10 years. Really interesting guy, like, really interesting rags-to-riches story as a developer. But, you know, we got talking about how he feels about the state of multiplayer shooters. Because I sort of had always known as John to be sort of a opinionated guy, have some interesting thoughts about shooters, not, you know, unafraid to sort of share his opinions. And when I asked him this, you know, he had some positive things to say about single-player shooters. John Gibson, sorry, he's the president of Tripwire. He's also sort of their programmer. He designs all their guns and Red Orchestra and things like that.
He also fires a lot of guns.
Yeah, he does. So when I asked him about this, he said he's really discouraged by the state of multiplayer shooters, and he went as far to say that, I'm just going to quote him here directly, "I feel like Call of Duty has almost ruined a generation of FPS players."
Shots fired.
That's actually, it's funny you say shots fired. That's what Cliff Bleszinski's tweet went out. That's what he said about this article in John's statement. So
it's a trend now.
To put it a little bit more in context, John was talking about, you know, with Red Orchestra 2, pretty authentic, realistic shooter by most standards. They went to design an action, what they called an action mode for Red Orchestra 2, which is sort of a more accessible mode for Call of Duty players in his mind. And he went to do that, and he brought in a group of experienced Call of Duty players. I'm not sure where he found them, but he did. And basically, he was really frustrated by the feedback that they gave him. That, you know, "I really don't like the movement system in this game because the players don't accelerate immediately and things like that." And just all these sort of what he viewed as pedantic criticisms. And basically, you know, just to sort of hone in on this a little bit more, it's a huge like monologue of an interview by John on our website that you can read. But basically, he goes on to say that, like, he's frustrated by the way that Call of Duty compresses its skill gap. And what he means by that is there's a low opportunity for sort of high-skill Call of Duty play in his mind. And what that allows for is, you know, there's less distance between novice players and beginners and sort of the experienced players. But that also makes it, you know, and he says, the way that Treyarch and Infinity War design a game like that is they just add a bunch of randomness. They add, like, you know, wide firing cone weapons. They add random spawns. They add devices that, in his words, can get kills with zero skill at all. calling in helicopters and things like that.
Yeah.
So those are his comments. They don't necessarily represent our opinions. And, you know, we would never just publish an interview as a way of saying something that we feel. It's just an interesting thought, interesting thing to examine. And the interview got a ton of attention online this week, so I just wanted to sort of break it open here and talk about how we feel about that. You know, addressing the question, has Call of Duty somehow ruined or changed or, I don't know, had some negative impact on FPS players, modern FPS players?
I don't think I would go so far to say that it's ruined it, but it's definitely, I would say, a departure from sort of a staple multiplayer shooter mechanic of just having to juggle an element of risk and punishment for messing up on something that you try out. And that's essentially how you learn in these kind of games, where you pick up a new gun you haven't fired before, or you're exploring a map you've never played, and you get killed for it, you get punished. And I'd say that's an essential part, because the only way to improve and to learn is through hands-on experience and giving you pretty much the most powerful weapon or an easy to remember map layout. You know, in this case of Call of Duty, they're usually box-like designs. I guess sort of just doesn't take that fact into an account. So I would just say that Call of Duty is pretty much its own brand of FPS multiplayer gaming.
Sure.
No, I agree, and I want to say no for kind of the same reason that I argued our face-off, you know, is the RTS genre dying.
Mm-hmm.
I think people that appreciate games that are more like Red Orchestra or more like the, you know, traditional PC shooters of old, I don't think that community has shrunk. I think it probably has grown. I mean, not as much as people who play games like Call of Duty. And the people that are playing Call of Duty now are the people that wouldn't have been interested in these other kinds of shooters anyway. It's a new market. It's a different kind of person who gets really into, you know, Halo or Call of Duty and that kind of thing in a serious way. And so I don't think it's ruining a generation of shooter players. I think it's expanding the pool of shooter players, and, you know, the people that have been shooter players for a long time are sticking with the kinds of games that we've always traditionally liked. Mm-hmm. So
I would say it's a little unfortunate to see sort of the diminishing of players who were so masterful at arena-style shooters such as Unreal Tournament and
yeah.
Quake, who managed to remember where every item spawned, the timings of every item,
yeah.
every nook and cranny, and just to see that progression of a player from, you know, a beginner to someone who just absolutely wrecks everyone on this one map. And you really don't get that kind of that same kind of thing in Call of Duty games.
No.
Because it's very equalized. The mm-hmm. you know, you get randomized spawn points in Call of Duty, where a room you just clear, and, you know, you clear a room and then you get shot in the back by the guy who spawned in the room you just cleared.
Yeah.
So I guess having that level of knowledge and data in your mind at all times is nowhere near the same level that you'd have in old school style shooters.
I mean, it is really interesting. I mean, this is kind of what I aligned with in John's comments, that the notion that, like, well, wow, like in 1999, 2000, 2001, right around there, I mean, Unreal Tournament, Counter-Strike, Quake 3.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the mainstream shooters.
That was the Trinity back then, yeah.
That's what kind of everyone was playing. And it's just sort of interesting to stop and think, like, those are insanely high skill games.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
You can play them at a low level, and it, you know, they're equally fun, I think, for those people that don't understand item drop-ups and things like bunny hopping and whatnot. But it is, you know, I have some part of my reaction is like, oh, wow, like, man, it is sad to think that the high skill games aren't the mainstream ones anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, a beer and pretzels experience is always going to have a higher adoption rate than, you know, a very specialized, you could even say boutique experience if you want to be really pretentious about it. And, you know, Call of Duty, it's a beer and pretzels shooter. That's mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's a party game. It's a just hang out. I don't want to be stressed out. I don't want to be fully engaged. I just want to shoot my friends and get yelled at by 13-year-old racists.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
kind
mean,
of game,
I mean
know?
Part of the reason Quake and Unreal Tournament and Counter-Strike yeah. caught on, I mean, there were technical reasons. They were
yeah.
technically impressive and innovative games in their own time. They were like, you know, mainstream gamers that had PCs, they just wanted to experience whatever was the latest and greatest, and it was that. But there was also sort of a purity to those games that can't really be compared to anything, I think, in either category, either in the mainstream category or in the hardcore category of FPS games today. Where, I mean, if you're playing Quake 3, you're running and you're shooting, and that's kind of it. You know, there are item pickups, but that's basically it. You know, you're not dealing with upgrades and things like that. You're not dealing with cover system mechanics. You're not dealing with bullet penetration mechanics.
Attack dogs.
You're not dealing with, like, intricate damage modeling and ballistics and things like that seen in Arma, seen in Red Orchestra. You're not dealing even with like a buying menu system seen in Counter-Strike. And just the purity of those games, I sort of equate that with more of a physical experience almost, in the sense that like Quake is fast. It just feels a little bit more sport-like, and for some reason, I feel like that's much easier for the common FPS player to sort of find something that they like in.
Yeah, you know, regarding that, I think those old game, those old shooters, are just a much better chance for a player to show off his or her own individual accomplishments that they can pull off in the game that pretty much catches on and everybody starts using them. You don't see a lot of, you know, standard FPS, maybe like prone abuse is from Call of Duty, but, you know, bunny hopping came from the old school FPS games. Rocket jumping came from the old school FPS games, and it's pretty much everywhere. I mean, you don't really hear about that same kind of stuff from Call of Duty because everybody has everything else that everyone else has. You know, they have the same access to the guns, attachments, perks, you know, and it's pretty much a matter of who can iron sight first.
Yeah.
That's how it boils down to at the very end. As opposed to maybe Quake or Unreal Tournament, where you can do something far more dramatic, but it pulls off the same effect, but with a greater amount of skill. I'm going to rocket jump over you, and while you're looking around for me, I'm going to rail you in the face upside down while I'm flipping over in the air. And
or even Tribes, which just has an insanely high skill ceiling.
Right. I mean, even the mechanic from Tribes, where you can whiz around on the map really fast, that arose from testing way back in the day, where they originally had jump packs that were had supposed to have a finite amount, but you know players found a way to just skid along on the ground, and now it's a common accepted thing.
Tribes is really an interesting thing to consider in this context. It's something I'm trying to figure out, and I've been just thinking about for months. Like, why didn't Tribes just catch fire?
Yeah.
Why isn't it today?
I'm confused by that, too.
It's really dropped off in popularity, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Not that we cheerlead for games here at PC Game or anything, but, you know, it's depressing to see what we consider to be an excellent FPS. We talked about it a lot last year.
Yeah.
Kind of not catch on for a lot of people, not catch mainstream appeal. And I'm still trying to understand why. It is a high school game in a lot of cases. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and people talk to me a lot about, in the context of you know, doing all the esports coverage I do, you know, why don't you cover shooters that much? And it's because a lot of what's being pushed is stuff like Call of Duty that's just, I mean, it's not as fun to watch in an esports context. Whereas if something like Tribes had really caught on, of the shooters that are out now, I think it has the most esports potential. Just
it does.
Because of
definitely.
The visual aesthetic of it, the fact that you can watch the flag, you have a focal point, and the extremely high skill ceiling. You know,
it's been interesting to see the reaction to Shoot Mania as well, which has been pretty muted so far. I don't think the game is officially out yet.
I don't think so, no.
It's not.
It's one of those that's not nearly as big in North America as it is overseas.
But it's basically sort of, you know, repurposed Instagib, which isn't a criticism. We love the hell out of Instagib.
Absolutely.
Great.
And you know, UT2K4, around the office here. But, you know, they are sort of putting what seems to be a really sincere push into esports with that game, but I don't think it's not appealing. I mean, partly because I don't think people want to play arena shooters anymore. I think there's a connotation with that type of game being very judgmental. And, you know, this is another thing that John brings up, and the notion that Call of Duty makes you feel awesome. Call of Duty just makes you feel like you're a really good shooter player. And he goes as far to sort of say that Call of Duty doesn't challenge people, doesn't, you know...
No, it over-validates.
Well, it rewards you for pretty much every little thing you do, whereas in older, in, you know, classic FPS games, you pretty much have to create your own rewards.
Right. Yeah, so. I mean, it's a sort of intrinsic versus extrinsic...
Yes, exactly.
...comparison. In the sort of, you know, in the comparison I make is like, you know, this is sort of a hypothetical and like worst-case scenario, but in Call of Duty, it's like, you know, you get a kill... You get maybe 4 notifications maximum or something.
Yeah.
You know, 5 pop-ups.
You completed a challenge. You got revenge on the guy who killed you last time. You got a new level. You unlocked this thing. and I don't know, you'll not.
Your radar's ready to go.
Without a bathroom break.
Right. Yeah. You have some sort of helicopter or yeah. artillery to call in.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, in Quake, it's no one, the game isn't talking back to you in that way. It might tell you Rampage or something. It might tell you Monster Kill, I guess, in the case
well,
of
all you really have, all you really have during that point is the scoreboard.
Right.
And when you check that and when other players check that, they can see that there is one player that is going to town.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that has a deeper impact for all the players in the game as opposed to having, you know, what equivalent to a billboard park flying up over your screen trying to tell you that you did this action.
Sure. And, you know, we're exaggerating a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, I mean, yes, I am.
I actually consider Call of Duty to be a fairly athletic game in some cases. I mean, it has the potential to be very fast if played in a certain way. I mean, if you're running around, if you're doing the sort of prone jumping and things like that, it can be played a little bit acrobatically, and I like it in those cases. But, yeah, I don't like all the window dressing mechanics and things like that.
Yeah, me either.
Anyway. It's a big topic. We're not going to try and solve the current state of FPSs on PC or sort of make a definitive statement about that. Go read John's, my interview with John, and develop your own thoughts and submit them, if you so choose, to our podcast. We don't have time to play questions today, but we hope to next week. Give us a ring at 877-404-1337, extension 724, or email us a question to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, let's talk playlists. TJ, you've just returned last night, but...
Right.
What are you going to be playing this weekend?
I am going to be playing StarCraft II, obviously. I'm running back through the Wings of Liberty campaign, and then I'm going to just jump straight into the Heart of the Swarm campaign to experience it all as a single piece. I'm also going to do kind of what I did with Dota last fall, where it's like, okay, I'm really going to devote a lot of time to the multiplayer, to the competitive side. I'm going to like make myself play at least 5 ranked matches a week. First time I've really done that since the Wings of Liberty beta was the last time I really seriously laddered in StarCraft II. So I'm looking to see if I can break out a gold, which is the highest league I got to. It's basically very middle of the pack. Last time I basically just did my placement matches and I was like, all right, still gold. And then I didn't touch the multiplayer for like 6 months. I'm also checking out a couple of games for preview. One of them is called Guncraft, which is it's very similar to Ace of Spades in that it's a Minecraft-inspired voxel shooter. It's a little bit different in that there's different durability of blocks, which is one thing I found kind of odd about Ace of Spades, that all of the blocks had kind of the same properties. So I'll probably have a preview up about that, and also Edge of Space, which is similar to Terraria and Starbound. It's like a sandbox sci-fi exploration side-scroller.
Damn, so, got some work to do.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been playing a lot of CSGO lately.
Yeah.
We are now hosting daily.
Nightly.
Probably going to go ahead and buy that.
You should.
Coming weeks here, yeah. It's but, $15, so why not?
But we're now hosting daily Counter-Strike GO events on our server hosted in St. Louis, Missouri. Every night at about 7 o'clock. On weekdays at 7 o'clock. I'm sort of going to play with what weekend times work for people. But every single day, just go to our Steam group. You'll see the events listed there. And we only play custom maps. But they're super easy to download. You can just join the server and it'll download automatically. Or you can subscribe to our Steam Workshop collection on Steam Workshop.
Yeah. I'm curious, has there been much of a surf community emerging out of CSGO yet?
There are some surf maps. I haven't tried them yet myself, but there are over 8,000 maps in that Steam Workshop.
They're in there.
Catalog.
Surf, for those of you who don't know, is kind of it's a map type that exploits the peculiarity of the physics in Counter-Strike to let you kind of slide down these... I don't know, what would you describe them
like
as?
Like rails.
Yeah, they're kind of, triangular rails, and it creates almost like a tribes element to it, so.
I'm so terrible at surfing.
It's one of the only things in Counter-Strike I actually got good at, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Beyond that, the, let's see, the Arma 3 Alpha, of course, is out there. I'm going to be jumping in some multiplayer this weekend, and I want to play Jason Rohrer's new game, Castle Doctrine, and in just a few minutes after this podcast, I'm going to be seeing Metro Last Light.
Oh, boy.
That should be cool.
And there's a free version of the Arma 3 Alpha coming out. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically any Arma, any friend that you have on Steam that owns the Arma 3 Alpha proper, who has purchased it, gets three sort of tickets to a light version of the Arma 3 Alpha. And what's omitted from it is, I believe, multiplayer and this and modding. But otherwise, you can sort of jump in there and try the little scenario missions and just see how you feel about it.
Nice. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Not bad. And Omri, how about yourself?
I have now jumped into what I did with Mass Effect games with Assassin's Creed. I'm going to be replaying all of the Assassin's Creed games. I am now on number one. And that'll take a while, to say the least. Yeah, I just felt like jumping back into a nice, strong stealth game. Good to see the beginnings of the series again.
Into the arms of a strong, loving
Altair. Yeah, but all this talk about Thief, I got to jump back into Thief now. It's got to happen. I'm going to be going back into Thief 1, 2, Dark Age, Thief 3, just doing all that stuff again, sneaking by, stealing stuff.
I feel like there's enough mods out there for Skyrim, and correct me if I'm probably wrong, TJ, but you could probably sort of set yourself up to play a Thief-style game in Skyrim, like very archery-focused, very, like, I don't know, are there any, like, sort of augmented robbery systems and stuff?
Well, the base game does have those repeatable Thieves Guild quests that are basically you need to go break into this thing and steal it. The stealth mechanics aren't tight and granular as far as, I don't know, there might be mods that improve it.
There are some stealth overhaul mods out there. Yeah.
But yeah, as far as like Skyrim doesn't have a lot of, I'm going to like jump up into this.
Yeah, there's no platforming.
There's not a lot of mantling going on.
Right. You can't like take weird routes through the gables of a roof or something like that.
I miss my rope arrows.
Oh, you say routes, not routes. Interesting.
I alternate, you know? I've heard myself say both.
Do you say tournament or tournament?
Tournament.
Unreal tournament. What?
Unreal tournament.
That's awful.
Well, do you go 1, 2, 3, 4 or 1, 2, 3, fur?
What?
You're just making stuff up now.
Wow.
All right, I think I'm done.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot to mention I'm playing SimCity.
Yeah,
I'm playing that with regularity. And I know it might scare you guys. I know, according to the internet, I'm supposed to just be having an awful time.
You need to hate it right now.
And I should be shaking my fist in the air at EA and just doing whatever I can as a journalist to punish them.
What are you saying, Evan? What are you saying?
I'm having a good time.
No, like, you are not.
I know it's crazy. It's, you know, it's some parts of the game, it gives really bad feedback and, like, 80% of the time. I was playing with my girlfriend last night, and I was like, all these advisors were popping up, and like the RCI panel, and like...
The RCI panel is just total BS.
It's like, and especially the protesters, too. The protesters seem like days out of touch with what's happening
in
the town.
Yeah, they're mad
that they don't go home. They just stand out there all day.
6 months ago.
Exactly. It's like, we're protesting too much crime in our town. There's like 100 people in front of City Hall, and I'm like, I click on the client crime panel. I have a police station, zero crimes committed per day.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I just had to explain to her, like, no, just like, don't listen to those guys. They're being fools over and over and over again. But like, we built a totally sustainable, like, oil town that we're going to transition into tourism, built like a Dutch windmill.
Nice.
And
don't you mean tourism?
You. Very good. Yeah, I mean, it's. For all the criticism that's floating around out there, it's an aesthetically pleasant game to play. Just a sort of tactile feeling to everything. To, you know, even if you're just zoning something, the way it sort of clicks around roads and things like that, the sound that pops up. You can turn on sort of Instagram-style visual filters for the game if you want to play in like a noir appearance or something, or you want to sort of saturate the colors and things like that. But beyond that, I mean, there's just a joy sort of setting a goal for yourself, like, I really want to take a bunch of recycled goods from my neighbors in my own city and then convert that into metal and plastic and sell that. I want to make money off of recycling stuff. I like that idea. And just finding a way to do that. Like, okay, well, you know, where am I going to put that? And like, where's the most traffic efficient place to place my recycling center? How am I going to raise like 100,000 simoleons to do this? How many trucks do I need? How many should I distribute to my neighbors? You know, and paying for it in space and things like that. So, you know, that's a sandbox game. It's flawed, yeah, but I'm having a good time with it.
The music haunts my dreams.
I'm curious how long you've played it, because I kind of feel like once you've made five or six cities and kind of built them up to the max,
yeah.
Like I don't really feel like playing anymore, not because of server issues or anything, but just because I feel like I've kind of seen everything.
Totally. I think that's a great observation, and
yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I totally feel similarly. I have the sense that my interest in SimCity is going to drop off a cliff in about another week.
Yeah.
Because exactly for the reason you mentioned, I think you're spot on about that. I played about 30 hours, 35 hours or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, once, you know, you can go for like a very large city and that creates a whole bunch of interesting problems that are very difficult to solve. Just cause there's huge demand for everything and there's, you know, any sort of misstep will, like if you lose power, then all these people are losing power.
Or if a monster destroys your nuclear power plant and irradiates the high wealth area of your town.
Yeah, the scale is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, once you're profitable, once you're bringing in tons of money, which there are a lot of ways to do, you're kind of just like, you're taking that in and like, yeah, you'll have an occasional crime problem that you're solving and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, the narrative kind of stops for me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, well, I built an oil town, or, all right, well, I built a casino town, and it's working. Now what?
Yeah, and it seems like even at max efficiency, there's kind of this almost maybe more of a soft cap than a hard cap around, like, 200,000 population, and you can't really exceed that, and
yeah.
I don't know.
I think great works are kind of the answer to that. I mean, I haven't really delved into that and tried to seriously build a region around, you know, building a huge solar farm, an international airport. Again, great works are sort of the civilization style wonders that
right.
you drop into a region and collaborate on. They're really expensive and things like that in terms of resources. But yeah, beyond that, like the end game, so to speak, I am a little disappointed by.
Yeah, the end game is just start a new city.
Yeah.
You can only do that so many times.
And you can't abandon cities, which is cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Or destroy them. I'm still trying to figure out the Godzilla monster and what he does. Because it seems like every time he just... I had him appear two times last night.
Uh-huh.
He pops out of the ground. He screams a lot and breathes some fire.
Mm-hmm.
Then he walks over to my garbage dump.
No, that's what he's there for. He wants to eat your garbage.
But then he just dies.
Well, I don't think he actually dies. It looks like he just kind of burrows into the ground, but then it says the lizard is dead, but it didn't look like he died to me.
Yeah, again with the bad feedback. Does he actually consume my garbage?
I think he actually eats your garbage, because it seems like...
Dumb monster.
I had a full dump at one point, and he came by, and then it wasn't full anymore.
It seems like he's providing a valuable service.
I know. Can I hire him? Can I make him a civic employee?
He both reduces your waste and kills himself.
Yeah. The aliens, though, are bastards, because they just kind of zap your houses and fly away. Steal your grandmothers.
Yep.
Jerks. All right, so that does it for this week, guys. Thanks for sticking with us through all this crazy web of news, various games with fours on them. And we'll be back next week. GDC is a week following that, so should be some interesting things coming out of there. And, of course, we are approaching podcast number 350.
Yay!
Yes, we are.
So look forward to that. Again, send us your questions. Visit our website. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/PCGamer. Really easy ways to support us and just kind of help us do our jobs if you're a loyal podcast listener and you want to help us out. Thanks so much, and thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.
See ya.
All right, thanks for fueling so much of that, guys.
No, it's
no problem.
All good. All good.
Wow.
Cool.